Welcome to this IFRS Foundation podcast, which will focus on the April meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board. The meeting took place in London on the 24th and 25th of April 2018. My name is Matt Tilling, and I'm the Director of Education here at the Foundation. Today I am joined by the Board Chairman Hans Hugevorst and Vice Chair Sue Lloyd to talk about the latest meeting and other developments. Before we go into the board's discussions during the April meeting, it's worth flagging a significant document that's been published since the previous podcast.
Yes, we at the end of March, we issued the revised conceptual framework. Conceptual framework is extremely important for the board because it gives sort of the intellectual foundations for our standard setting. It gives guidance to the board in how to set standards, so a very important document.
So what are the biggest changes in this version compared to the previous version of the conceptual framework?
Well, for one, we have added a chapter on measurement. Measurement is obviously a very important part of accounting. And in the old conceptual framework, we didn't really have much on that. We made it clear in the conceptual framework that believe in mixed measurement models, so that we don't give prevalence to either historical cost accounting or, for example, fair value accounting. But what we do in the conceptual framework is that we provide high-level guidance to the board when to pick current value measurement method and when to pick a historical cost measurement model. So that gives the board in its future standard setting more guidance as to the which measurement instrument to pick, which is often one of the most difficult parts of setting accounting standards and the most controversial parts of accounting standard setters. We've also made clear that we see profit or loss as the primary performance measure. That will be pleasing to those who have always thought that we give primacy to the balance sheet. That is not the case. And we've also made clear that if you take profit or loss seriously, that OCI, other comprehensive income, can only be used in very exceptional circumstances. So if you're interested to find out more about this conceptual framework and what has changed, there are various summary documents and other materials available at our website.
Let's move to what happened during the April meeting, and let's start with the discussion on primary financial statements and company performance. This was a continuation of the discussion during the February meeting.
Yeah, so our work on primary financial statements is part of the better communication agenda, a very important part of our agenda. What we are trying to do is to provide more structure and thus more comparability, especially in the income statement. We've already taken a couple of decisions. We have decided to define some subtotals. For example, a subtotal that comes very close to EBIT and another subtotal that comes very close to operating profit. And those are commonly used subtotals in the market, but everybody does it in its own way. And we hope that we can create a little bit more comparability in this. Now, in many cases, companies also use performance measures that are not required or defined by IFRS. For example, they will use an operating profit, which is adjusted, which excludes infrequently recurring items. If that is the case, then we will ask the company to state which of these alternative measurements they think best helps in understanding their company, and we ask them to bring that to disclose that in the notes, and then in the notes make a reconciliation to the closest IFRS defined subtotal. So that has two advantages for the investor. First of all, he knows where to find that measurement, that performance measurement item. And secondly, it will be subject to audit because it will be part of the notes, and that is not always the case in current circumstances.
And what's next with this project?
So we've made good progress, as I just said, but there will be more discussions, including deciding, if anything, what we need to do about EBIT for example, financial institutions. It is not so clear that EBIT is useful for financial institutions such as banks. So we have to see whether we would have to create an exception for financial institutions. And we also still need to decide when we go forward, whether we are first going to publish a discussion paper or whether we can go straight to an exposure draft.
Sue, the board is really beginning to think about potential models for accounting for business combinations under common control, or BCUCCs. What did you look at this month?
This month we had an education session on this topic, and this was really a chance for the technical staff to update us on the approaches that they are thinking about for a very specific subset of transactions within the scope of this BCUCC project. It was quite a detailed presentation. It's a slide deck, and I would really encourage anyone who's interested in the project to have a look at that. It's quite accessible, not too long a read.
And can you briefly outline the specific type of business combination under common control transaction you were looking at?
Yeah, so at the discussion this month, what we were looking at was a simple scenario where you've got a parent company that owns two companies, A and B. So because of this, obviously they've got a common parent, so A and B are considered to be under common control. And in the example we were discussing, company A acquires company B. So it's a sort of classic example of a business combination under common control. But very specifically in the fact pattern we were looking at, it was assumed that entity A has got existing non-controlling shareholders. So what we were looking at was specifically what information would that non-controlling interest holder in company A need to understand the transaction that's gone on, and whether there's anything special about that business combination that's different to, you know, just a business combination between unrelated parties. So as you may remember from previous podcasts, the board's previously agreed that our starting point for analysing the project is an assumption that we start with the normal business combination accounting in IFRS 3, and then we decide if there's a reason for making adjustments. And sort of consistent with that starting proposition, in this case, the starting point was an assumption that fair value information would be the information interesting to this non-controlling shareholder. And what the staff really got us to try and focus on was that where there's a sale of a business between sister companies, so like A and B in our example, because it's within a group, part of the transaction might actually relate to equity-related transactions. So for example, if company A were to pay more than the fair value of company B's business, that might represent the payment of a dividend. Or if company A were to pay less than the fair value of company B, that might represent a capital contribution to company A. So the discussion was really all about what we might need to do from a measurement perspective to try and sort of unpick that possibility. And I think the thing to flag for anybody looking at the slide deck was that an important aspect of the discussion was at the moment we were just talking about what would be the sort of perfect information content and any discussion of sort of cost constraints and what the, you know, benefits might be relative to the costs of the different approaches weren't included in the discussion so far. So it's something we'll come back to.
Hans, there was a long discussion on goodwill and impairment, and it looks like there are issues that require a little more research.
Yes, we were trying to decide about the next steps on the project, in particular whether we should issue an exposure draft or a discussion paper, or perhaps some combination of the two for different parts of the project. We didn't reach a decision yet. We are asking the staff to make an inventory of possible items that could be brought forward to an exposure draft, some possible smaller improvements to impairment, and perhaps some improvements to disclosures that needs to be sorted out. And we are also going to see whether there are ways to see targeted feedback about the benefits and costs of using the unrecognized headroom approach as an additional input in the impairment testing of goodwill. It's a bit of a complicated story, which thus far we feel has been misunderstood by a lot of people. So we want to see whether we can explain it properly and whether we can get some good feedback. And we have asked the staff to take a look at that, if we want to do that, how to do that.
But there was at least one technical decision made during the discussion.
Yes, there was a proposal to allow some indefinite-lived intangible assets acquired in a business combination to be included in the calculation of goodwill rather than to be recognized separately, as is currently the case. But the board has decided not to move forward with this proposal.
Dynamic risk management was discussed again, Sue. And while I know this is one of your favorite topics, I would suggest that those who are interested in the project should probably read the board papers to get the full story. So instead, I was wondering if you would like to talk to us about the definition of materiality.
Thanks, Matt. So dynamic risk management is obviously important, but I think definitely those who want to find out more are best to look at the board papers given its complexity. But turning to materiality, so this again is part of the bigger suite of projects that we're looking at under the banner of better communication and financial reporting, part of the disclosure angle of that project. And we've been looking at the definition of material. So we published an exposure draft last year. In that ED, we proposed some minor amendments to the definition of material as it is used in IAS 1 and IAS 8. And basically, the exposure draft was proposed to clarify the definition, to improve the understanding of the requirements, and really to try and make sure we're using a consistent definition across our literature. But one thing we did propose as part of the ED was making a change to the definition of materiality, which would have brought in this concept of obscuring information being something that you would need to think about to determine whether a piece of information was material. So we received 71 comment letters on the exposure draft, and we discussed the feedback at the board meeting. And the good news was that almost all respondents supported the proposed amendments, but some respondents also expressed some concerns about, in particular, this notion of obscuring information, and suggested we needed to reconsider at least some aspects of that proposal. So we had a pretty extensive discussion on this to try and give the staff some direction for next steps. And the general message I think that the staff received from the board was that we thought they should continue to work on trying to include this notion of obscuring within these amendments to materiality, but to try and do that in a way that took into account the comments received. So it's another topic where we're waiting really for the staff to do some more analysis and to bring back some proposals to move this project forward.
That brings us to the end of the April podcast. Thank you, Hans and Sue, and thank you to our listeners. Any feedback on these podcasts, please email communications@ifrs.org. As always, the full summary of the board's discussion and decisions at the April meeting can be found in the ISB update on the IFRS Foundation's website. Thank you all very much.